Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are coming to you live from the Cayman Cookout in the Grand Cayman Islands at the Ritz-Carlton. We are spending the whole weekend hanging out with some of our favorite chefs in the entire world, including the man, the legend, the host of this weekend, Chef Eric Repair. We talk about pétanque, we talk about his favorite way to drink pina coladas, and we pay homage to his pal, Anthony Bourdain. So sit back, relax, and here we go. Snacky Tunes, live from the Cayman Cookout, here on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are sitting here with Chef Eric Repair, welcome to the show. Thank you for having us at the Cayman Cookout.
Welcome to the Cayman Cookout.
I mean, when we got the email, I was like, obviously this is a mistake, but if they're not going to say anything, I'm not going to say anything, so here we are.
It's no mistake.
11th year, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
When did you first come to the Grand Cayman Island? When did you first get down here?
I came for the first time in Cayman Island 15 years ago.
Okay.
When this hotel was actually being built.
Okay.
And I landed, they picked me up at the airport.
Okay.
With my luggage, put me on the boat, asked me to take my clothes off.
Sure.
And I went to swim with the stingrays.
As one does.
Exactly. And then I came to see the construction quickly.
Yeah.
We had a case of champagne on the boat, so we had to do a quick tour here. And then we went to eat on the dock somewhere by the water. And then I said, where do you want me to sign?
Where do you want me to sign? Now, for those who are unfamiliar with the local cuisine, how would you describe it? What's the history of it?
So Cayman Island is in between Jamaica and Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
It has been very influenced by the British.
Sure.
Who had a strong presence here since it was a British territory.
Very nice. That is, strong presence is as nice as you can say.
And therefore, it's a mix of Caribbean, West Indies mm-hmm. Flavors and a little bit of Western British influence that is not very relevant.
No.
But when you talk about the Caribbean influence, it's very interesting because of the different fruits, vegetables that we find here,
mm-hmm.
the spices, the influence from Jamaica that is very close.
Yeah.
So this is definitely the base of the Cayman food. Now we have a lot of restaurants here of very great quality in Cayman Island, and you can eat food exactly like you would be eating food in a big city, but a lot of restaurants make sure that they use local products, seafood like conch, which are in season now and that you find everywhere.
I cannot wait to go have some.
Yes, of course.
And even today at Nancy's lunch, we had some local lettuce, we had local salt. I mean, there's some basics here that isn't just seafood.
Absolutely, and it's a market, a street market twice a week.
Ooh.
15 years ago, it was not, no one was farming. It has been a very quick and a change in the island where people said, oh wow, I can live here from cultivating the land. I can live here from going fishing. It's something that is very interesting in such a small island to see such a big movement.
What do you think was the underlying reason for that shift and that change?
I like to believe that we are a little bit responsible for it, the rest of the community of chefs, of course.
Sure.
By saying, hey, listen, we don't want to eat frozen fish that come from Miami, that was probably caught here, sent to Boston, processed, and sent back through Miami. We don't want to eat vegetables that have absolutely no flavors, are supposed to be from the Caribbean, and are, I don't know, cultivated somewhere else.
Yeah.
We want local. And by supporting the fishermen and the farmers and by paying the right price and creating sustainability in terms of finance, and that has changed the island.
How much does building those financial and social and community infrastructures matter to you? When you could easily, I mean, you know, you're at the Ritz-Carlton, it's a global brand, you could source from anywhere.
Yes.
Because it takes a lot, I mean, it's so much more work.
You know, chefs are passionate and not necessarily rational in terms of decision sometimes.
Another great word, not rational, not rational.
But at the same time, it's a blessing because we're not counting beans.
Yeah.
We care about delivering an experience to people.
Sure.
We care about giving great ingredients to people. And we care about supporting communities. And
yeah.
This is that. It's pretty universal among chefs everywhere today.
And you can also set up systems in place that, being in New York,
you don't have access to, or in a way that be so directly influential to those systems.
For sure.
So, you know, you're known as a New York chef, but you're also known as a chef down here. You have Blue. How did you get started cooking here? What was the original inspiration for the restaurant, especially when you saw this as a half-built hotel? Because this could easily become just another sort of, hey, it's my name on a restaurant. I go there once a year with my family, and I'll pop up if someone gives me the right check. But you're here and you're cooking. What was important to you in launching that type of restaurant here?
Sure. So first of all, if you go to once a year with your family and you work with an hotel, I doubt they're going to give you a check. However, the idea to come here was to bring the philosophy of Le Bernardin in Cayman Island, but without doing a copycat of Le Bernardin. Le Bernardin has a very strong sense of place. It's a New York restaurant with a New York energy. And
I mean, that room is, you walk in there and that's New York.
And you're like, hey, I'm in New York.
I'm in New York.
Yes. And as you know, it's a seafood restaurant where the fish is the star of the plate.
Sure.
Our tradition is rooted into the French tradition in cooking and in hospitality. However, because we are in New York and we are surrounded by so many different influences, different cultures, it's a certain natural and smart fusion in mm-hmm. between my culture and Asian cultures. From the South and Japan and so on, or different countries in South America, or countries actually anywhere in the world. So we wanted to have a restaurant that will be luxurious, but will be a Caymanian restaurant. Hmm. When you enter the restaurant, you will be like, I know where I am. I am in the Caribbean.
Right.
And the food will reflect the same feeling, using, again, local ingredients as much as we can.
Right.
Local flavors integrated into our menus, and we did that, and it's a success, and I'm very happy that now I can bring my family once a year.
If I knew that this was
get a check after I work hard in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we're actually staying down the street, if you could just make it out to cash. So you have this incredible palate down here. I mean, you know, obviously New York, you're not pulling fish from the East River or the Hudson.
We do not.
You do not. So what local ingredients speak to you here that you use specifically here? Because obviously you're pulling influence from Le Bernardin, but
yes.
What's coming directly from here that is inspiring you, or that's even coming up to New York? Like, what's traveling back with you?
Well, we have here, we are in season for the conch. So that's very local.
For people who don't know what conch is, what type of fish
is it? It's basically a gigantic sea snail
mm-hmm.
that lives in warm waters, mainly in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So we have conch that we use at Blue. We try to find conch in New York, it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But we have spiny lobsters that are almost in season as well.
Love a good spiny lobster.
And they are great.
And those who fish for them are wild men and women.
Whoever fish is wild.
Yeah. Whoever just fishes in general is just wild.
I'm joking, but the grouper, the snapper are tropical fish.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we can find that in New York.
Yeah.
We do not serve grouper at Blue and in Le Bernardin because it's sometimes on the verge of being in danger.
Yeah.
But we have snappers. And then we bring some influence from the Caribbean in terms of flavors.
Yeah.
A good curry.
Good curry fish? Come on.
It's delicious.
Then a little bit of rice?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you actually bring up a good point because so many problems with the ocean going on right now and sustainability. And you look at, you know, this, you know, the dock to dish movement.
Yes.
How do you balance that? Because some people come in and go, I need my Dover sole, I need my bluefin tuna, things like that. And you're offering a luxury experience, and people just may not be educated beyond four or five fishes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you work with that? How do you change people's perspective on what fishes count as not just a good fish, but as an expensive gourmet fish?
Sure. I think the idea is to make people feel comfortable about their choice.
Yeah.
and they shouldn't feel that they are being lectured.
Yeah.
Or have a guilty trip about eating anything. They should be happy and they should have choice. I think you have to give options.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to alienate the person who wants the Doversol. You don't want to alienate the person who wants to eat a certain food. You want to have options, and then you can, in a subtle way, say, well, why don't you try this fish? It's from the region. It has been caught in Montauk yesterday. And then you give them the choice. You don't say, don't eat Doversol. I think that's the
wrong way.
The wrong way. We are in the hospitality business.
So when did... You've been here for a while. You had the restaurant.
Yeah.
When did you get the idea to have the Cayman cookout? At what point did you say, I think other people should know about this?
So we opened 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And the Cayman cookout is celebrating this year the 11-year anniversary.
Yeah.
So it took us 2 years to decide to create this event.
Yeah.
In the middle of the winter when, as we know, it's freezing in New York.
Where people go... this is the point in New York where people go, I got to get out of the city. I definitely had people text me who's like, hey, looks like you're having fun, just so you know, my pipes just burst. So I hope you have a good time.
I hope mine do not burst while I'm here. But yes, I mean, to create an event in January when some parts of North America are very cold,
mm-hmm.
and to make it very convivial and very intimate, it's something that has a lot of appeal for the public. And
yes.
they come here, and they are close to the chefs, and we have a lot of interaction with them, and we have events on the beach, and we create some dinners and small wine tastings, and it's all very intimate. And it's also fun for the chefs. We don't make them work too much.
No.
We want to make sure they spend a lot of time at the beach if they wish to, or do anything they want, explore the island or anything like that.
It seems like it plays really into like a very good like self-care. You know, for people who don't know, in the F&B industry, November, December are like the hardest times for chefs. It's like the busiest season. So by the time we get to January, the burnt out feeling, most restaurant holiday parties are in January. So it's almost like a self-care kind of recentering moment for these chefs.
Absolutely, and if you have choice, you choose a location that has good weather.
Yes,
and warm waters.
Warm water, and where you have a restaurant with good ingredients.
Silky sand.
Yes. Was it tough to convince chefs early on to come and do this, or was it just an easy sell?
It was not difficult because I have a lot of friends in the industry.
Yep.
And I call my friends first. And Jose Andres was one of the first ones to say yes. Anthony Bourdain, that we missed this year, obviously, I was one of the first ones to say yes. And then we have friends like Daniel, who came many times, and chefs from New York, but chefs from all over the country, actually, who came here. And who always call us back and say, hey, guys, can you invite me again?
Yeah.
And we try to rotate a little bit.
Oh, yeah, spread the wealth.
We have to rotate because...
That's how you get to say your friends.
And so on. But it's pretty easy to convince people in my industry to be at the Ritz-Carlton in the Caribbean with a room facing the ocean.
It didn't take much to get us down here. We're going to take a quick commercial break.
Sure.
And by commercial break, I mean we're going to go play a song from our archives. And then we'll be back with Chef Eric Repair at the Cayman Cookout in the Grand Cayman Islands as we sip on pina coladas.
Yes.
Very delicious. In our paper straws. Here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
This time, 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 this time,
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Chef Eric Huppert at Cayman Cookout. So we're in our 11th year.
Yes.
And by we, I mean you. year one for us. But
can you invite us back already?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so that's on.
You don't even have to leave.
Yeah. In a journey like this, in an event like this, which now you come to and you see this and it feels so dialed in and it just feels, you know, like sort of old hat in the way that it runs, what was the first few years like? What was it getting off the ground? Because it's one thing to get chefs down here and it's one thing to get people like that, but you know, 11 years ago there wasn't social media, food wasn't where it was in pop culture. How was it getting this off the ground?
It was actually pretty easy because the Ritz-Carlton has a lot of resource.
Mm-hmm.
And they were bringing chefs by the dozen, or cooks by the dozen,
yeah.
And waiters, and from other resorts and that are quiet now, or hotels that are actually in the cold, usually they quiet in January. So we had a huge support. We had the infrastructure to host the festival. And most of the chefs have done events, have created dinners or lunch in their career, and it's just bringing them here and saying, hey, look, we have everything you need. So it was not that difficult. It was interesting because it was surprising. We thought it would be much more challenging to say, oh, we have a festival and come down. The first years we had probably less people from outside the country coming, but it was a lot of locals that were definitely curious and supporting the festival. And then it became more international. And today it's a good mix in between local, in events I'm talking about, in between locals and people coming from abroad.
So you mentioned in the first segment that farming and agriculture and infrastructure has grown as the festival's grown.
Yes.
How has that shaped the food that's been served or the events or even the conversation that you've had?
Well, 11 years ago, we had already great seafood, local seafood.
Yeah.
And it was not enough food from the farmers to deliver to the restaurant, but they were producing enough food for the festival.
Mm.
So we had local ingredients already for the festival, and that was great. Chefs were happy. It was not a difficult start. And then we grew a little bit in terms of events and more dinners and parties. But it hasn't changed much. It's limited in terms of tickets. So mm-hmm. We don't have this monumental crowd that comes and kills the intimacy of the festival. Chefs are pretty accessible. And from day one, we wanted to do that. The idea was, let's showcase Cayman Island, let's showcase the lifestyle that you can have at the hotel, but also on the beach. And we have been very disciplined and diligent in keeping that spirit.
I mean, is there a number of tickets or attendance that you keep this festival at? Because it seems packed, but it also seems like I've now run into a bunch of people in 24 hours. The guy in the elevator was the guy asking the questions.
Yes.
The woman, I think, is like, there's a balance.
And it seems that from the crowd that people have been coming back for years.
Yes. We have a lot of people coming back year after year after year.
There is a number you need to say, but it's like, is there a number where you feel that if it was that more than that many people, it would lose something or it'd be much more difficult to execute?
For sure. I don't know if you saw the class this morning of José Andrés.
Oh, to the brim.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it was about 120 people max at that class, and we could make it much bigger.
Right.
However, the bigger it will be, and the more we will lose the intimacy, and Jose will not be communicating the same way, so we keep it to a certain number of tickets. Like a class, cooking class, is no more than 100-120. A wine tasting is no more than 20 or 30 people. Tonight we have a big barbecue on the beach.
Oh yeah,
we're going to be 400 or 500 people, but it's spread out through the night.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of stations, it's a lot of chefs cooking, and you don't go online for 40 minutes to get
one small little crusty.
A little bite. It's a very quick. It's a very quick way of getting food.
I mean, and you've done about a million food festivals, food events.
When I was younger.
Yes, when you were younger. but those were educational for you to do this. Like, where do people get it wrong? You know, where do they make mistakes for these food events? That it's not good for the chefs, it's not good for the people. Like, what are the mistakes that you've seen?
I don't think it's mistakes. It's about greed.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, I was hoping you would say that.
But yes.
And yes, you can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
With that format. A festival where people fly and you sell tickets and so on. And again, you have to be sustainable. I mean, the festival cannot lose money year after year, because in that case, you cannot survive. But we're not looking to make a fortune out of this event. And I think it's not a mistake, but the huge festivals that attract 60,000 people a day under a tent, to me, are not appealing at all. I don't want to criticize anyone in general.
No, of course.
But I certainly want to be different.
And I think because you know, everyone says you're so polite. That is the most polite answer. We used to do barbecue events, and I forget what chef told us, but they said anything after 650 portions is like meat on a chip, and that's like the best that you can do at that thing. And if you're below that, you can actually do something a bit more complicated. But after a point, you're just like feeding the masses.
And since the food here is definitely not meat on a chip, you've had so many great chefs come by. What have been some of the magical food moments over the years? And I'm sure there's many, but what are one or two that stick out in your mind where you go, this was, everything came together, the south wind came in, the moonlight hit, you know, the sun was silky enough, and the food was just, it went, there was a moment beyond just what was on the plate.
You know, I have challenges with my memory at my age. However, last year was the 10-year anniversary of the festival. And we added a lot of extra events that were basically parties where you didn't even have to buy a ticket. It was great music and locals rolling cigars and some great food around it. But last year was a very, very special moment for the festival. Daniel Boulud was here. And when you bring Daniel, you know it's going to be...
It's going to be a party.
It's going to be a party. That never stops. And I was very happy last year with what we saw. And I think the people were also, like, not only the chefs, but the public was thrilled to be in this gigantic party that never stopped.
You know, that's an interesting point, because it's a lot of outsiders.
Yep.
People coming in.
Yes.
There's a lot of money. And sometimes people can have an issue with maybe the inequality that exists when you have an event like this. Mm. How do you work to balance that equality so you don't feel like an outsider, so you don't feel that you're just coming in, using, and leaving?
First of all, when you have people coming back.
Yes.
Which are chefs, winemakers, producers, like we have a Paramount Caviar from New York, who's coming year after year. And then when you have repeat people in a resort that want to experience the festival, you have your answer.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't come back if it was not something that is very different. And chefs, I think, love the conviviality of it. They love the fact that they have time with their family and children. And you know, José Dorders grew up with my son, and Anthony Bourdain Dorder, and we were all on the beach 11 years ago. And today we don't have Anthony with us, but it's, they have grown and they're still on the beach, and we party and we smoke cigars and we drink and we eat. You know, it's.
And speaking of Tony not being here, because obviously it looms large. There's going to be a celebration tomorrow night.
Yes, it's not really an official celebration. It's like Jose did today with the paella class. It's paying homage to Anthony's friendship, to his influence, to his legacy. Tomorrow we will speak a little bit more about Anthony's legacy. But the festival is not mourning Anthony, we are celebrating Anthony.
It's been interesting to see how people react to his loss. Obviously, we all look to you because you were so close to him. And I was curious, you're Buddhist.
Yes.
How that played into you allowing to deal with this loss, because I think the industry loses a lot of people. Sometimes, you know, there's a lot of suffering, a lot of people with issues. So
sure.
If you had any advice based on the way that you dealt with something, and also being so public for this, on how to either to both deal with the grief of losing someone and how to reach out for help, what advice would you give to young chefs who might feel like they can't speak up, or they see a colleague in problem, and how would you encourage them to speak?
Well, if you want to speak, you have to speak. I mean, no one should stop you to say what you have in your heart. It's very important to understand that everything in life is impermanent. We don't have to every second remind ourselves that since we are born, every second takes us to an end. Of course, when you have a loss of someone that you love, it's powerful and it's touching you, and you shouldn't suppress those emotions. But at the same time, you have to move on because you're here, and that person, you believe in. Some people believe it's another place for the souls, and some people do not. But it doesn't matter. What we have to understand is that we're here today. Tomorrow, we're not here anymore. But life goes on, and it's the nature of life. It's what it is, and it's like that, and it will be like that until this planet disappear.
You have so much joy that, when I mean, just looking at the way that you put it, the joy comes through it, and it's such like a powerful way to deal with grief. It's inspiring.
Well, thank you. I mean, look, you shouldn't be afraid to be sad and show sadness, because again, you don't want to repress those emotions. It's not good for yourself. At the same time, I think it's important to move on, and again to know that everything is not forever, and therefore it makes you appreciate every moment even more.
It does make you feel very lucky to be here, to be surrounded with friends, to be surrounded by good food and good conversation and things like that.
Absolutely.
Before we go, we have to ask you about one annual tradition
that
we are absolutely in love with, and that's the annual Petanque competition.
Oh.
So.
That is.
I mean,
this is an important moment.
This is an important moment.
For
those at home who don't know what Petanque is.
Petanque is the French version of bocce.
Sure.
Which is like playing balls, right?
Right. So even though, like all things considered from Italian to French, Italians invented it, French perfected it.
I'm not sure about that, but if you want, it's okay. It's okay with me. So the Petanque tournament is part of the festival, and it's when you will see some incredible change of personality.
Would you say that the players are competitive?
Yeah. Chefs are definitely competitive. Their children are competitive. Some people who participate in a festival who are spectators participate in a tournament, and they are very competitive as well. We try to make sense out of it, but it's really about being able to misbehave a little bit, scream. I'm going to give you an example, and I'm sure Jose is going to be thrilled. I'm reminding what happened last year, but Jose was losing and very badly, and suddenly I heard a scream on the courts, and it was like, everybody has to stop taking pictures, I cannot concentrate. That's why I'm losing. they can't take pictures anymore. So, and then he was like, people are too close to my court. I can't focus.
That very thin, composed veneer falls away.
And I think the previous year was me who was ranting about something and saying, look, I'm playing with my son, he's only 13. Come on, guys, what are you talking about? So anyway, the pétanque, I think it's a fun event. It's where it gets wild. It's where you can misbehave and it's accepted.
And it's good that it's on a Sunday, knowing that people are...
Yes.
You may like, you're like, we need a little breath. We need a little break from each other after that game. Well, Chef, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If people want to come next year, which they absolutely should, where can they go? Where can they get information?
We hear planning starts the Tuesday after.
Yes, actually, even during the festival, we start to talk about next year.
And people then start handing you cigars and being like, for next year, for next year, Chef.
Yes, it's true. Last year, they were giving me one cigar at a time. Now they give me two cigars at a time.
So if people want to come next year, where can they go and where can they...
Every year in October, the Ritz-Carlton release the tickets for a lot of the events.
I think it sells out.
It sells out extremely quickly.
Yes.
Some of the events sell out in a couple of hours because people are waiting. They know it's the October 1st or whatever has been announced. We have time for next year, but at the end of the summer, I know you're not thinking about the cold winter in New York, but start to think about tickets for Cayman Cookouts.
Winter's coming, always.
Yes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance. Here we are from Grand Cayman, Cayman Cookout, here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
So high, you see where you're going with your eyes closed. Wild eye, growl and smoke, return every question in the same tone. There's a state line out in those pines, buried in frozen ground. We've chosen our size, now we can't turn it around. Chain Emily to the stake. The family's worried. She's terribly late. A haze rolling across the lake. If we go, who's to know? Dead by morning if we stay. Tongue the paper unfolds, slipping it through another keyhole. The slim hope of fireproof rope, kerosene off of your sweet nose. It's a steak knife in my thigh, watching you flicker in real time. I call your own kind, now we can't turn it. How it will stay. But hey, I've never been so afraid. With this cold in my bones and a child engulfed in flame. Ba 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 ba. Ooh.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio has plenty more. Hi, I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I'm the host of Feast Your Ears here on HRN. My show explores the world of food through storytelling. Every week, I talk with people inside and outside the food world about how experience has shaped what they eat and cook. You can find Feast Your Ears wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to the show, Radical Dads. I'm sorry we did not have the star of Home Alone and Home Alone 2. As a warm-up band.
He's our usual opener.
My personal favorite was The Good Son, when Macaulay Culkin drops the F-bomb. Don't F with me, Mark. You know? Anyone remember that?
I never saw that.
Dude, I don't know. I can't even say it's on Netflix. I don't know. It's like, you know, they like try to become like a serious actor at like 9.
But then he kind of pulled it off later on, right?
I don't know. He was in what, Saved? Party Monster?
Party Monster, that's not, yeah.
I don't think anyone pulled off anything in Party Monster. I went back and watched it. I was like, you know, I knew it didn't hold up, but it really didn't hold up.
Oh, no.
So welcome back. Thanks. You guys will always now have a special place in my heart for the show you guys played yesterday. Thank you so much. How have you been?
Really good.
Great.
Oh, excellent. Wow. Thank you for the lengthy response of that.
Next question.
Oh, boy. We're going to run out of stuff. That's the only question I have is, how are you doing? I thought we could stretch that. So things are good, right?
Yeah.
Here we just blowing up.
Put up our record.
Huge.
Put up the record.
We opened the restaurant on Avenue C.
Oh, yeah. Recently. Radical Milk Duds.
Radical Trends.
So you got the new record. How do you feel about that?
Well, it feels good to finally have it out there in the world, because it's been done for a little while.
How long was it gestating?
I don't know.
Like 14 months.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like an elephant baby.
Yeah. We had to wait till the culture was ready for us.
Yeah.
And we felt like now was the right time for that.
What do you mean when the culture is ready for you? Do you mean like...
We're not sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, album number
three.
Yeah.
What's it like going into the junior album?
Don't fuck this up.
Yeah.
No.
I feel like the sophomore album's the more like, don't fuck this up.
Yeah. So I feel like that up.
Like,
then
everyone loves the first one, and the sophomore is like, we gotta change it up, man. It's like, don't really change up the sophomore album. I feel like junior album, you can get a little more experimental.
You gotta wait for your Revolver.
Oh, yeah.
Rubber Soul Sergeant Pepper. Chris and Lindsay hate the Beatles, though, so I shouldn't be talking about these references.
You hate the Beatles?
I don't hate the Beatles. I just am not, like, fanatic.
Well, that's fine. I mean...
I'm more, like, I don't know. There are a lot of other bands that are more important to me from that kind of
We had an
era,
interview with someone in... This came up, and she was just, like, freaking out. She was just like, what do you mean you don't love the Beatles? And I was like, I know, right?
Oh, right under the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, third album, what was the approach this time?
Just send it to Julian. We recorded at Silent Barn with Julian and Carlos, and
awesome.
Which was great. And they have a... How to describe their attitude towards recording. I don't know.
Cavalier.
Really? Cavalier.
Guns blazing?
Yeah. Like, just, like, get it done.
Yeah, second or third take, Julian was like, well, you could do it again, but it's probably not going to get any better. Whoa.
Whoa.
I don't know
what that was. Make that sound.
That's when you try and go for the fourth take, he just plays the button. He's like, we got it.
So, is that like,
Wow.
Wow.
That's scary.
Okay. So second, third take. How did you feel when someone's like, you got it?
Well, every time we were just like, oh, yeah, that's fine. It was kind of cool to not, like, stress out about it. We were just sort of like, yeah, that'll do. Like, it's not going to get that much better. We know what we're doing. We're just gonna knock it out.
But it was good. It wasn't like, yeah, it was like, that's not gonna get much better. Are we back? We'll cut all that out. We'll start this over. And
is that a thing?
So what was it like only going in for two or three takes?
Great.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're into it.
It felt good. There's good energy in that studio, so
we mostly recorded it live. Like just playing all together.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it wasn't a lot of like overdubbing. Because that feels very unnatural to us.
You got a lot of energy from just playing it live.
Just feeding off of each other.
Yeah.
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 Just giving some good bass face, drum face, keyboard face.
Oh, yeah. The whole time.
Plus, we're getting old, so we weren't physically capable of doing too many more takes. So it's like, let's just get it done in one take.
I got 9 takes in me today.
No more overdubs. Yeah. Sounds fine.
What, do you guys want to play a song for us?
Sure.
What song are you going to play for us?
In the Water?
It's called In the Water.
Okay, cool. Here we got Radical Dads live on Snacky Tunes.
Hopefully the amp will sound okay now.
It's about to catch on fire.
Awesome. You want to do two more takes? Yeah, you know what? We got it. We got it. Never mind. We got it.
Stick with that one.
Julian said that was fine.
Yeah. Julian just texted me. He said, listening, totally fine, moving on. I heard you guys are also working on two other projects.
About
9 months in the studio each, right?
Yeah, totally.
You are no longer going to be Radical Dad's name only and Radical Mom.
Yeah.
But Radical Dad and Mom in IRL.
Yeah.
That's
true. It's pretty crazy.
And you guys also timed the babies to be born at the same time. Like,
pretty much.
What was that conversation? Was that coincidence?
We've just been planning our calendars for so long.
Yeah.
Like, look, we got a torn 12 months. So we pop these kids at 9.
Yeah.
So you're excited?
Yeah.
Super excited.
We're going to have to break up the band, though.
Really?
Yeah, it's not ironic enough. We'll start a new band.
Yeah. Radical Parents. Or, like, super cool family.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Probably.
Adult Responsibility.
Adult Responsibility.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
College Fund.
College Fund. There we go.
Yeah, 401k plan.
Right.
So that's so exciting. What's it like to be an active band with two individual kids on the way?
We're reining in the activity.
Yeah. So now we're like late night, like drug, whiskey, infused sunrise parties.
Yeah, we're kind of like, well, can we play first? Is that cool?
I know we're the headliners, but yeah. Tired.
We had a record release show. That was really fun, and we were, you know, we played third, I think, or something, and we stayed up pretty late, and it was awesome. We were up to like 3 or something, and that hadn't happened for a little while, and then we woke up the next day, and none of us really had been drinking or anything. We were all obliterated. We felt like we had just, like, been hit by a bus. So.
It happens.
I don't know. It's kind of embarrassing. We're old.
Are you guys, like, healthy lifestyle, like healthy eating, no gluten, no meat, none of that stuff?
We're pretty healthy, but, you know, I have a sweet tooth. I have a soda tooth as well, so it's a little
tough.
A little dicey sometimes. But, you know, I've heard that all that gets filtered out and the baby will be totally fine.
It's probably just a coincidence that the baby's kicking as soon as you have a soda.
Yeah. Really acting up when you have that 8th Twizzler, right?
Just a coincidence.
So with the new album out, what's the plan? Are you going to try and fit in one more tour before the babies are born?
Nope.
No.
We're gonna see what happens after they're born. And then maybe we'll tour the world.
Yeah, we're getting to the later stages of the pregnancy stuff. So it's like when you're deep in the third trimester, you don't really want to be touring.
No. So I know I'm not allowed to fly, but can I play 14 shows in a row?
Yeah.
And what's the decibel limit
on the
belly?
Oh my god, that'd be so funny if you had like the headphone on your belly. Like, I think this is where its head is.
Oh, I think, you know what would be good is like that breastfeeding pillow, like putting that around myself for
also
a show.
Also protect from the guitar. But
yeah, I think I'm going to do it.
I think you could silkscreen some of those up. Sell them, right? Radical Dad breastfeeding pillows.
This is when our like marketing really takes off.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a natural, organic fit to go to the, like, you know, one Radical Dad onesies. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Stuff right.
We've custom made those before.
Have you really?
Yeah. But they were just, like, special orders.
Special orders?
Yeah, if you need specials.
Yeah.
Can we hear another song?
Definitely.
What are you going to play?
Cassette Brain. Yep. This is our baby's favorite.
Oh yeah, does the baby like make movements when it hears one song versus another?
I think that our baby really likes Robbie's drumming because whenever the guitars drop out and it's just the drum, she's like kicking along.
Doug and Annie are here.
Oh my god, Annie Hart! Oh,
where are they?
They just walked into the.
That's
other
so
room.
Funny.
I mean, I love Annie Hart. She's put out a new single.
Yeah.
She did.
She's throwing my baby shower.
Oh, she is.
Yeah. You're invited. You can come.
Really?
Sure.
I thought it was like a girls only. That's Brooklyn.
Yeah. Brooklyn. It's any gender.
It wouldn't be rad if we didn't like mix up the rules, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, can we dedicate this one to Annie?
Definitely.
Okay, cool. Here we go. Radical Dad's Live on Snacky Tunes. Thank you. So good. If you were to get swept away, where would you want to go?
New Zealand.
Ridgewood, Queens.
To Andy's house.
Swept away for that. So, I know you got a few gigs coming up.
Yeah.
DJ gigs.
We're doing some DJing.
At the Ace Hotel.
Yeah.
6-hour sets?
Minimum.
Four-hour sets.
What's your long tune bathroom break song? Or I guess if it's all three of you, you can rotate out, right?
Well, we were Cortez the Killer.
Cortez the Killer, good option. That's a classic Greg Bresnitz, DJ Snacky Tunes.
I used to start with Ginger by the Lilies. That's a good long one to start with. It's not super long.
Yeah.
It's like 6 minutes, right? 5 minutes?
We're just going to grind it out with a lot of long ones.
Something like 10-minute Yola Tango.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Nightfalls in Hoboken, it's like 17 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's like a mix. Like, you want to like flip songs enough so you're like moving through it, but sometimes you're like, a song every 2.5 minutes, you get a little crazy.
Yeah.
Are you pumped? You gonna get some martinis? Well, I guess you're not gonna have any martinis.
I know. I was wondering if they did any special, you know, virgin cocktails.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Fresh juices, things like that.
Yeah.
And then, so those are your DJ gigs, and where are you playing next?
We are gonna be playing at Rough Trade.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. I think it's Thursday the 16th.
Of April.
Of April, yeah. And we're doing a little thing on WFMU as well, so that'll be fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so happy Rough Trade figured it out.
Yeah.
They were shut down for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, ooh. That was, I think, a collective groan in the music industry out here. Just like, how did you not think about soundproofing?
Right.
Okay. There's like 9 condos across the street. So April 16th, and then one of the kids. So like, is this like we're getting close? Like the last time
that might be it for New York.
Oh man,
we have a show in Boston on April 25th.
Boston. Dude.
Favorite burrito places up there. Anna's Taqueria.
Love Anna's.
Felipe's is good, but
Anna's. What's your order up there? What you like?
You know, whatever.
I get the quesadilla.
Super burrito.
I'm with you. Quesadilla. They do this like I think they dip it in oil and fry.
Like, they just like brush it on.
Like, I'll get a burrito but get it inside a quesadilla. I just like that crunch. Yeah. I don't know. It's like funny. Like, I never expected to have my favorite burrito be in Boston.
Yeah.
But, you know.
New York needs to figure that out.
Yeah.
We got plenty of Viennese restaurants, but how about a great
So, and where are you playing in Boston and when?
O'Brien's Pub.
Nice.
With Ava Luna, with Julian and Carlos.
Oh, hey, Ava Luna. O'Brien's Pub, is that in...
Alston.
Yeah. I think I used to go to, I want to say, Sunday night's 80s night there and dance. I used to live, like, down the street on Wadsworth.
Nice.
You miss those days?
I do not miss Boston. Okay. I think we've touched on it before about my no love lost for that city. Yeah. We don't have enough time. We have enough time for you guys to shout everything out and play a song, but not enough time for me to rant on Boston. But I have gone back literally just, like, I've gone in, gotten off the highway, gotten on and gotten back on the highway. It's worth it.
It's totally worth it.
And the last time I went, I got one for dinner, and then I got one, and I ate it. I brought it home with me, I had it for breakfast.
Good move.
Yeah. That's what we call a pro tip. Real pro tip.
That is a pro tip.
So I want to make sure we get one last song in. But where can people get the album? Where can people get the information? Where can people get Radical Dad's onesies and silkscreen prams?
The website.
Which is?
It's radicaldads.com is one. And then there's radicaldads.bandcamp.com.
Shout out to Bandcamp.
Yeah, Bandcamp.
Bandcamp.
Thanks, Bandcamp.
Forever killing it.
Killing it.
And are you on the gram? Instagram?
We're not very big on the gram. We are on the gram. But yeah. Very minimally.
I've heard social media, just like farm tables, gonna be taken off pretty soon.
Yeah.
Trent Swatz this year.
We got the Twitter pretty decent.
Yeah, at Radical Dads for your request for onesies.
We just started a Tumblr.
Oh, nice.
Why not?
Yeah.
Find us on Yik Yak.
Oh my god. Have you used Yik Yak at all?
Yeah, I'm using it right now.
Oh yeah. This pizza's great.
This place is awesome.
What are those people doing in that weird box? thank you guys. Shout out to Ben Sisto for setting everything up yesterday. Shout out to the fam. Shout out to Anna out in LA. Shout out to Joe, my dog, who's probably just laying on the couch. Shout out to Kentucky and Kansas.
Yeah.
and the March Madness. It's big wins. Big wins. I don't
so
know.
Proud.
I'm not really into sports. thank you so much. What's the last song you're going to play out? Play us with?
Don't Go.
Don't Go?
Yeah.
Well, we have to.
I know.
But what are you going to play?
Don't Go.
Don't Go.
But what?
But who's on first?
But who's on first? We never. We always have time for bad jokes. You know what I'm saying?
There we go.
Thank you so much. Again,
thank
shout out
you.
To Cherry
thank
Bomb.
You.
And we'll see you next week with Philip, I think. All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.